Hello, and welcome to episode 93 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We are here today with Josh Kurtz, editor of E&E Daily, co-founder of Maryland Matters, a political news website for Maryland. Josh, how are you doing today?
Doing all right. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. So the first question I'd like to pose to you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
that's almost a loaded question. I would like to think that I've been a journalist for more than 30 years. I mean, and I would like to think that journalists, as a rule, just advance the public interest. I mean, that's why most of us do it. Some people do it for fame and glory and fame and fortune, but, you know, I mean, that's not why I got into the business, and so in some small way, at all the jobs I've had, I like to think I've done something to advance the public interest.
Have you been a journalist throughout your entire professional career?
I started out as a journalist for a couple of years. I then worked in politics for 2 years and then decided that I really wasn't really for me and I should get back to journalism. So
was that a campaign or as a staffer?
First it was a campaign. It was in a congressional race in the suburbs of New York City. Mm-hmm. And then my candidate lost, and then I worked for a New York City councilman for a year and a half. Uh-huh. At City Hall, but otherwise, yeah, I've been in journalism. My first paying job in journalism was an internship in the summer of 1982.
So what drew you originally to journalism?
A couple of things. From the time I was a little kid, I was always interested in writing. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, I became very interested in sort of politics and government. Mm-hmm. And so the two kind of meshed. I had two big influences, probably, and it's one for journalists of my age. It's almost a cliche to say Woodward and Bernstein, but
right.
That was, you know, what they were able to do with the Washington Post to bring down Richard Nixon. That certainly affected me a lot.
And just for our listeners who aren't even here,
yeah,
could you describe what is sitting on your desk in your office right here?
I have a little piece of carpet from the Watergate Hotel, going back to that era.
A literal
momentum, yeah. And it has a funny little bug on it to sort of, suggest the bugging of the Democratic headquarters there. And another thing that really influenced me growing up was reading the Village Voice, which was, you know, the alternative weekly in New York, and there mm-hmm. were two writers there in particular who had a great influence on me, these two guys named Jack Newfield and Wayne Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
And every week they were coming up with these great, mostly investigative pieces about, you know, judges on the take, you know, political bosses who were in bed with the mafia, you know, somebody's, you know, some powerful politician's brother-in-law who was getting, you know, the contract to install parking meters in New York City.
Huh.
So it really, you know, I mean, first of all, these stories were always just, you know, fascinating and they outraged me, but it also kind of showed me that you can do really meaningful, important work anywhere in journalism. You don't have to be at the New York Times, at the Washington Post, whatever.
So,
I mean, this was literally, I started reading those guys in my teens.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in my mid-20s, I actually did go to work for a while for this guy, Wayne Barrett, at the Village Voice. And Wayne is now probably best known for being basically the first guy to ever write about Donald Trump.
Huh.
And in the late 70s, he wrote about the sweetheart deals that Trump got on, you know, to build his first hotel and other stuff in the city.
So why would it be outrageous to learn that a public contract was awarded to a relative of a politician? The reason I ask this question is to really get into the crux of how journalism holds power accountable and why that's important.
Well, I mean, you know, you would like to think these things are handed out on the merits to, you know, these are vast contracts worth millions, if not billions, of dollars. You know, this is public taxpayer money. You would like to think that contracts are being awarded on their merits, you know, based on a combination of the quality of the product and, you know, the price point. But, you know, frequently it doesn't work that way.
Which means that basically elected officials presumably should be advancing the public interest.
Right.
But if a relative or a friend of theirs gets a contract, it seems as though they're prioritizing generating their own political capital and rewarding those who have helped them get to where they are than advancing the public interest through their position that they were elected to advance the public interest. Is that basically what the deal is?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it would stun the average person who hasn't really thought about it. I mean, how often this happens.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, and then you said you're interested in politics, and then you ended up working in politics.
Did
your experience on the campaign trail or in City Hall in any way shape or affect your perspective of politics from the other end, where your candidate was getting hit by journalists?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, certainly there were... I worked first for a congressional candidate, and then I worked in City Hall in New York for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there were certainly times when the congressional candidate I thought was, facing some unfair charges or whatever. And, I mixed it up with the reporters covering the campaign a few times. I mean, that's, you know. That was my job.
So you mentioned that you were inspired by the Village Voice, and ultimately you even got to work with your mentor. That must have been pretty amazing. I'll ask you to speak about how that was for you, and then I have a follow-up question about the types of coverage that they provided you spoke about earlier.
Okay. Well, I only actually worked for him for 6 months, but I think it was, you know, as great an education as I ever had.
What was special about his writing?
Well... I mean, he's you know, in his 70s and kind of ill now, but he still does some writing, but I mean, he always started from the position that, basically, fairly or not, that a politician was corrupt, and that it was he likes to call reporters, this guy Wayne Barrett, he likes to call them the people's detectives, and he always just thought it was his responsibility to sort of ferret out corruption, And
if there's no corruption, what's the role of a journalist?
Well, but luckily there always is. Right? or unfortunately, there always is. He usually had one politician he was targeting for an extended period. And when I was working for him, he was mostly targeting the Speaker of the State Assembly at the time, a guy named Mel Miller. Literally, on my first day working for him, he was working on a piece about how one of Mel Miller's best friends had a no-show job with the state legislature.
Oh.
So, and my job that day was to call up this guy and ask him what he does all day. So, you know, right then I thought, man, this is what I was, you know, born to do. So it was great.
So, it remains current. One of the more recent speakers of the House in the New York General Assembly
was
indicted.
As well, and convicted, yeah.
Sheldon
Silver, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So history repeats itself there. The question I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
You mentioned finding great inspiration from the Watergate scandal.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Village Voice.
Right.
Showing these different instances of corruption, and in fact, your mentor said that he operates upon the presumption that all politicians are corrupt and he just has to find it, and that's what public service is for him.
Yeah.
So my question is about the public narrative. If all the public sees when they open a newspaper is bad politician, bad politician, bad politician,
right?
You know, it would be fair to say that a reasonable reader of that newspaper and a consumer of general press and media would conclude that all politicians and public servants are corrupt, from bureaucrats to elected officials and everything in between. Obviously, nearly 500,000 Americans currently are alive who have run for elected office or hold elected office, which aren't always necessarily the same thing with appointments. But the point is, do you really think every politician is corrupt? And if not, what do you think about the implications of leading logical readers to that conclusion that all politicians are corrupt and all politics is corrupt? And has that had any play out on a national conversation that led to Trump being president?
Personally, I don't think every politician is corrupt. I think it's, you know, there's a limited amount of newsprint, you know, every day. There's a limited amount of bandwidth, you know, on the air. I think, you know, I've written stories about good things politicians have done, but I still think, you know, on balance, you would rather know. I mean, I really think it's the journalist's responsibility, the media's responsibility, to tell people what isn't going wrong. Let's start from an assumption that things are, you know, mostly okay, that people are there for the right reasons. But, you know, if we're not going to expose what's going on, you know, that's bad. Who else is? You know, I mean, does it affect the narrative? I would argue that an investigative piece that sheds light on someone who is corrupt or isn't doing their job properly, mm-hmm. has a whole lot less to do with the toxic narrative than, you know, partisanship, attack ads, you know, those kind of tactics. And, you know, frankly, there are people have prejudices that apparently, you know, if we're talking about Donald Trump, he seems to have tapped into.
So bad news, so stories of corrupt politicians are more newsworthy than stories of responsible politicians.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're doing your job, that's not news. You ought to be doing your job.
You ought to be doing your job. So on the topic of journalism as a public service, on the one hand, I understand if journalism is meant to hold power accountable, right, then journalism would report on malfeasance. But if journalism is also about public service, would you say that reporting on so-called boring stories of responsible politicians saying, look, you know, last Wednesday, this politician got a tree removed from that person's driveway, or the toilet was backlogged and they got the sewer company out there to fix it, and that was a great instance of constituent service. Right. Or did you know that this politician got a tax credit that enabled this employer to stay in business and that saved four people's jobs in downtown XYZ? Right. Reporting those types of stories, would that also be a public service, and would it be less of a public service than reporting stories of malfeasance?
I think it is a public service. I think it, you know, every media outlet has its own scope. You know, not every, you know, in Montgomery County, there used to be the Gazette papers. The Gazette may well have reported on a politician who, you know, got a tree removed, or...
Because that's news too, right?
Because that is news. But...
So is there a bias in the media towards negative news?
Again, I don't think it's a bias. I think it's a, you know, you have a responsibility to uncover what's going on that shouldn't be going on. Let's start with an assumption that most of these people are doing their jobs. The media will also, you know, cover legislative debates or votes or what have you. That is another piece of the puzzle that sheds light on what public officials are up to.
Now, you mentioned, shifting topics a little bit, mentioned that the Montgomery County Gazette,
right,
is a newspaper that no longer exists, that is,
right,
now defunct.
Yes.
And you also
are...
It
was also in Prince George's and Frederick, too.
And you mentioned that you are the co-founder of Maryland Matters, a political news website for Maryland.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about why you are creating Maryland Matters, why such a political news website is needed, and if the closing of the Gazette and other newspapers has any correlation with your decision to start this endeavor?
It does, absolutely. I first started covering Maryland politics 21 years ago. At the end of 1995, the number of outlets covering Maryland politics and government, number of outlets covering Maryland politics and government, well, has just declined sharply since then. The Baltimore Sun is a shell of its former self. That was really leading the coverage of Maryland politics mm-hmm. back in the day. The Washington Post, just does not seem to have the commitment to covering state and local politics that it once did. I mean, they're not committing the resources. There isn't the sophisticated level of coverage. Mm-hmm. And, when I started, the Gazettes were ascendant. There was the Montgomery Journal mm-hmm. and Prince George's Journal, which were small daily newspapers. There are a whole bunch of other outlets that just have come and gone. And so there is definitely, particularly on the state and local level, a void now that wasn't there 20 years ago.
Has there been any consequence to this void?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think there's a lot less accountability with elected officials in Maryland. I think Maryland voters generally are considerably less informed. Frankly, I've heard elected officials say, we don't know what's going on in our own communities. We don't know what's going on halfway across the state. There are consequences to that, too.
So why create this new organization? What is the goal of this organization? How did you get the idea to start it?
Believe it or not, I've been thinking about starting a website on Maryland politics since like 2000 or 2001. It didn't seem to make sense back then, and other jobs have intervened, but I've been an editor for journalism outlets at the national level for over 14 years, and as national politics has become more toxic and predictable, state stuff looks more appealing to me. There just isn't quite the level of partisanship, though it's gotten worse. There's still some interesting coalitions that get put together. Mm-hmm. And again, there just isn't that much exposure now to state and local politics that there was before. So I think there's this real gap, and I'm hoping to fill it. And
are you going to be conducting investigative journalism?
That's certainly the hope, yeah. I mean, right now, we've created a nonprofit to do this. We're trying to raise money, when we raise enough to hire a few reporters and a couple of other staffers, then we'll launch.
It almost,
at a full scale.
It almost sounds like a political campaign, as if you were a candidate fundraising, right? Yeah. When candidates raise money, they're not, it's non-taxable contributions,
right?
So that's analogous, and then you use it to both disseminate your message
right.
and to hire a staff who can help disseminate the message.
Right.
So it sounds quite comparable. Have you ever thought of yourself as similarly a public servant as a politician, just approaching it from a different vein?
Well, I certainly have more sympathy now than I ever had. I've always had sympathy for politicians and the fact that they have to raise a lot of money. I certainly have more sympathy now that I've started shaking the tin cup myself.
So what do you hope to accomplish? Do you think that politics in Maryland will change? Do you think that voters will be responsive to your message? Do you think that somehow the status quo will be changed for the better once you open up your shop?
I try not to think of it in such grandiose terms, but I guess the short answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, all right. So what is it that's so particular about Maryland? You did say you worked in the suburbs of New York City, and then you worked in New York City Hall.
Oh,
begs
politics,
the question,
yeah.
Are you from New York?
I'm from New York City, yes.
Okay, then how is it you ever got to Maryland, and why is it that you're interested and have been invested in Maryland for the last multiple decades?
How did I get here? I got hired. I actually was living in the mid-1990s. I was living in New Mexico and working in New Mexico, actually, but I got hired by the Gazette, where I used to work, to cover. They were sort of building their profile in Montgomery County and statewide, and they wanted a state house reporter, and so they hired me. So I was lucky to be there in a period of incredible growth for the Gazette, mm-hmm. and you know, I covered Annapolis for 2 years on my own. Mm-hmm. Next 2 years, I had a partner covering Annapolis with me. Next 3 years, I had a partner covering Annapolis with me. My last 2 years there, we had a bureau of three covering Annapolis, and so it was a really exciting time, and you know, we really kicked ass in Annapolis for a while, and like, even, you know, we did, back then we only came out twice a week. There wasn't much of a website, but, you know, so we didn't have the ability to come out 7 days a week the way the Sun and Post did, but the 2 days a week we did come out, we really felt like that we were their equals, and that was a pretty heady and exciting time.
Do you have any fun stories you could share about Annapolis and the work down there and your effect down there and just what it was like?
Well, it's a very, it's a pretty closed culture down there. I mean, it's a very, I hesitate to use the word incestuous, but I mean, you know, it's a very, you know, it's kind of its own little world down there. But, you know, it was great to know that people knew what I was writing. And, you know, there was a time when there was a debate about, you know, credit card fees and, you know, late fees and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like cable companies and their ability to charge late fees. And I remember I wrote a column, actually, mm-hmm. and then the next day it got denounced, or that very day, I think, it got denounced on the state Senate floor, and I was like, yeah, that's cool, and I'm having an effect. So definitely within that world, you know, you could tell that what we were writing made a big difference. So, did it make a big difference in the outside world? Probably not as much as I would have liked. But
so it was that you uncovered a story. You found something that you thought was unjust, wrong, that Marylanders were getting hurt.
Yeah.
You wrote that story. By the way, for our listeners, we keep referencing Annapolis. That's, for those who don't know, especially if you're listening in a different part of the world, Annapolis is the state capital of Maryland, where the Maryland General Assembly, which is the state legislature, is located. So Josh was actually a reporter in the state house, covering the House and Senate. So it sounds like you, Josh, identified some issues yeah. that you thought were unjust, and then it turns out that legislators may not have been aware of that issue beforehand. As soon as you brought it to their attention, they agreed it was unjust and then proposed legislation to right that wrong.
No, actually, quite the contrary. I got denounced on the floor exposing it, and they ran the damn legislation through anyway.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
but,
well.
You know, I mean, that illustrated to me the power of, you know, the cable companies, the utility companies, you know, the phone companies, and you know, all these years later, they're still incredibly powerful. I mean, some, you know, governors come and go, but, you know, the power brokers really don't down there in Annapolis.
So as we approach the end of the podcast, I'd like to ask you a final question, which is to reflect upon your years in journalism.
Yeah.
In Maryland, in New Mexico, in New York, just anywhere. And speak to me about really what pulls at your heartstrings. Why is it that you find yourself willing to do? I mean, you got denounced on the Senate floor.
Right.
You've had disappointments. You've had victories.
Right.
But what is it that keeps you going, that this commitment to public service? Why is it that you are so committed to public service and that you keep slogging through, and as you say, you're even willing to hold out the tin cup and try to start your own organization now because you want to do what you believe in?
Well, I mean, part of it is just as simple as, you know, I've been doing it so long, I couldn't possibly find something else to do. But, I mean, you know, there's always something interesting out there and, you know, something that needs to be exposed, and, you know, you want to be... you know, you always get excited about the next story, however big or little it is.
So that has been Josh Kurtz, editor of E&E Daily and the co-founder of Maryland Matters, a political news website for Maryland. Josh speaks about his years in public service being particularly within the context of state politics and the need for journalists to hold power brokers accountable, to try to be the people's detective, to try to find those stories that are in the dark, where there may be malfeasance, where in any place where those who are publicly meant to be advancing the public interest may instead be using their position to advance their personal interests. And those are the types of stories that has driven Josh through his career in public service in the field of journalism. So, Josh, I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. Great to be with you.
And this has been episode 93 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk to you next time.